want to talk about cars. Ferrari, GTO, Bentley, CRX, and even down to your great-granddad's Peerless. Welcome to No Driving Gloves, the car talk authority, where experience, knowledge, and controversy share the same seat. Enjoy the ride. Now your hosts, John and Derek.
I don't know. I'm alive.
Welcome, everybody. No Driving Gloves Thursday night. And got Derek and Dave and John. Maybe I should say, shame. I need to change my name to Don. So it'd be Don, Derek, and Dave. We could be the three D's. Kind of like my high school report card.
Don is like the number one thing I get called when people get my name wrong.
Well, they
I like to think it's a title, you know, like Don D. Sorry, what do they call you?
I'm the Don.
The Don.
The Don, just like, okay. You know, the Godfather.
I was saying, we got to be careful. John and I are both, you know, Italian. So you start using the name Don, things could go bad.
Don. Oh, I don't know. I guess we probably should talk about the mafia because we're talking about money tonight. It's kind of a question that was, sound bad. People come up to me all the time. And honestly, people come up to me all the time and go, looking for a car, but I only have so much money. And what would you buy? And then they start throwing out stuff like, you know, I only make $12 an hour. You think a Toyota Highlander would be a good used car? You're not going to buy one newer than, you know, first model year back in what, the mid 90s. You
know, sorry, that car disappeared with cash for clunkers.
A lot of those, let's say cash for clunkers, that'd be something we should really dive into that list one night. So what we're going to do is we're going to take some various price ranges. And if you're out there listening and watching, contribute, let us know what you might buy. And we're going to look at it from, it's your only car you can have. Well, we're going to pick your income point, the only car you can have. And we're going to discuss new cars or new cars, used cars, whatever fits that price range. What would you buy? And then the classic car, if we had the classic, and we'll kind of take in some of the maintenance costs. And we're going to use, in my research, it seemed most of the sites Google threw out said 10 to 15% is the ideal amount of your monthly income that you should put towards a car payment. Some sites said you could go up to 20. So I picked the number 15. So if, for example, if you make, I didn't write my notes big enough to read them from a distance. If you make $18 an hour, you would have $450 a month for a car, you know, $36,000 a year. And that's kind of what I did. I took the hourly rate, doubled it. Yes, I should have multiplied it by 2,080. I only multiplied it by 2,000. Forgive me, but just in case, you know, we're not taking into account insurance and anything into this. So when I threw this question out or topic out to you guys, what were your initial thoughts?
Well, my initial thought that I put right in the group chat was, this is the episode where we find out most of us should be riding the bus. Because, I mean, you know, if you're only making X amount per hour, are you really going to qualify for a $250 a month auto loan? Or if you're going to get a car at that price, is it just going to be an inflated used car value junker? You know, there's a point where you go, okay, if you can really sock away $250 a month, just do that till you can get to a point in cash, pay in cash for something more than what you can, if you can manage to sock that. But it's hard the way it sucks up our daily values. But then my next thought, and I'm sure Derek's right here with me, was what vintage car could I get and nurse along at that price? Because you get to too much technology in these used cars at a certain low level. And okay, what electrical gremlin has stranded us this week? And you're chasing corroded grounds and decayed plastic, and you're not actually going to that job that's paying you your $10 an hour.
Yeah. And I mean, you said your immediate text was, well, we all know we're going to be taking the bus. My thought was, wonder what kind of pair of shoes I can buy. Because I'm going to be walking.
Something with good.
You know, I mean, really, I mean, you take that money, you could get a nice pair of, you know, Nikes or something that got, yeah, good support, good sole, good insole. You know, that way when you're walking, you're not doing back damage. You know, you're going to be able to move up in the job because you're going to be able to use your back at work instead of throwing it out on the walk to work.
So you buy a pair of Air Jordans for, say, $200 and you walk everywhere. Now your shoe payment's $200 a month because you're going to wear them out. You're going to wear out a pair of shoes every month.
Hey, if they're quality, they don't wear out.
So I had Googled, and this is what drives me nuts. And I've got a lot of little statistics here because I like my trivia. But I Googled like average used car price or whatever. First thing that comes up is the wonderful company Carvana. And they have a little thing. What does it exactly say? Let me grab my correct mouse here. $300 monthly payment cars. So I clicked that, opened it in a new tab. The filter it's applying, $5,000 down and $300 a month.
Pretty big chunk to put down. That's a full car for me for most of my life.
So if you're making, say, $300 a month, that's putting you probably right around $12 an hour if you're doing the 15%. At $12 an hour, do you think you've saved up $5,000?
No, unless you never spent aunts and uncles from the age of five. But even then, that was probably earmarked for your college or whatever.
I'd say if you're making $12 an hour, you probably didn't go to college. But I've been looking at jobs lately. Well, I've been looking at jobs lately, and some of these things require a master's degree, and they start at $14.50. So,
yeah. But nobody wants to work anymore.
Well, why would you? You put $100,000 into your education. If you get a decent paying job, you're going to have a massive student loan payment. If you stay unemployed, you don't have to make a student loan payment, and you get all your benefits from the government. There's no encouragement to work, but I don't want to make this about working and that. I just want to talk about cars, and I'll probably touch on, Derek, did you listen to Tony Whatley this week?
I don't think so. I'm behind on some episodes, so.
Yeah, I haven't listened to him for a few weeks, but I listened this week. And the guy made a really good point, which I'll probably use in my closing. But just to throw it out there, because I think this initial conversation came about, I was talking to a customer service person in a retail store that isn't known for its great paying wages. And she's seems to be a very intelligent person in that, and is having difficulties with her Hyundai and needs to kind of get another car. And the question is, what would I buy?
And she's not a wrench, I take it.
Oh, no. I would
say, he said she's a nice girl. Oh, you said wrench.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. The W is silent and the R is not.
You know, and the question is, what car would you buy? And, you know, my immediate answer, not knowing what she makes, not knowing income. If you want to buy the most reliable, dependable car out there right now, you buy a RAV4. But that's not the answer to her question, considering she probably is in that $12 or $13 an hour range at best. But let's just make this challenging. We're going to start. If you make $10 an hour, as my example, which is here, it gives you $250 a month as a car payment. Now, we're not including insurance, anything. $250 a month on a 36-month note, because I don't think you're going to get much more without interest. You can buy up to $9,000. So say you got a good interest rate, you're going to spend, and Dave said it before in the pre-show, you got $6,500, $7,000 to spend on a car. What would you, who wants to jump in with their selection?
This is not even a price range that I'm even familiar with in cars that would be new enough to send someone out on their own who didn't. Well, and that's disapproving cat just got to the point that I was going to make. And it's because he made the point to me earlier when we were in close to the same situation, which is about a 15-year-old Impala with that 3.9 liter V6 is probably like the sweet spot. I mean, it's not Camry levels of forget it and drive it forever, but it's something that's still going to be holding up, even though it's old. But it's old enough that you're not going to get your local bank to just give you a loan on it either. I mean, you're going to have to arrange some alternate form of financing to get it, which is not to say that it can't happen. I mean, you get credit unions to work with you and stuff. But and disapproving cat says, and I take his opinion seriously on this because he's a lot closer to the used car market. It's cheaper to fix than a Camry. And being a Chevrolet, you know, I would kind of hope so. You know, Toyota brand name parts are probably a little up there because they are such high quality, and GM just can't commit to those level of prices, despite what I think is a pretty negligible quality difference at this point, both for Toyota.
And again, if you're buying, go ahead, Derek.
I'm going to jump in because, you know, disapproving Kat, Dave, what you guys just laid into is actually kind of where I was. I was actually pinching the pennies a little tighter than that. I was figuring in, you know, taxes, registration, those kind of things as well, and thinking about my annual budget there and monthly costs. And, you know, I was looking at 2010, 2012 era Ford Focus and Fiestas, because again, they're known as a pretty reliable car, not too terrible to fix, albeit just like with, you know, 2008, that era Impalas, you still have electronics to deal with, which could bite you a butt at some point. But from a mechanical standpoint, you know, again, that era of Ford, especially the Fiesta and Focus, the small cars, they're pretty well known as reliable cars, good running. And, you know, I found a number of those in the under $4,000 range, on, what is it? Cars.com. You know, so, you know, they're around. Now, I didn't specifically look in my area to see how many, to see how many were available, but just doing a large area search,
there were, want to Google escorts in your area? Why not?
I didn't say the escort. I said the Focus.
I wonder what.
But if I was an escort is also a great car. I thought about that too. Those are very reliable. I have a friend that runs escorts and Miatas. That's all he'll drive.
Miata is always the answer, and there might still be one in that price range, actually. And I looked seriously at those many years ago when I had no children as a potential fun rear-wheel drive car to put snow tires on and enjoy in the winter as an alternative to letting a Falcon or a Corvair run around on the salt.
Now, in this price range, I'm actually a living example of the car I drive every day for work, and I put serious, serious miles on it, is a 2015 Fiesta. Disapproving Cat basically said, don't get an autofocus after 2010 and keep that old body style. He's kind of right. Focus and Fiesta had transmission issues with the automatic, until 2017. And my car, shortly after buying it, had that issue. Catch one is, it is actually a recall from Ford. So if you end up with that issue, you can probably get it covered under the recall without even having to worry about the warranty. And it's actually not the physical transmission. It's like Derek said, it's the electronics. And the TCU, the transmission control unit, goes out. And the new improved transmission control unit supposedly solves all those problems. I bought my car with 89,000 miles on it. Approximately 20 months ago, it sits in the driveway with 152,000 miles on it. Had the transmission issue right about 95,000 miles. They fixed it fairly quickly. Really happy with the Ford dealer and the service on that. I get lucky with Fords. I know a lot of other people don't get lucky with Fords. That's one reason I'm hesitant to recommend them, but I paid $6,500 for my car. If it was financed, my payment would be right around $200 a month plus insurance. And I think that car bumped my insurance. And of course, I've got multi-vehicle and multi-line and all that stuff that Flo talks about in the progressive commercials. I don't have Progressive, but so it can be done. I think I put $1,000? I don't know. When I talk a car, I talk financing and then you pay for it. But, you know, if you talk about putting $1,000 down or something, you can bring that down and that, you know, that bumps the bank a little bit. But I think it can be done, but not every 2015 Fiesta is going to be as dependable. It all depends on the person before, you know, how the cars were taken care of and that. obviously you're not looking in a new car. You're not looking for at anything probably the newer than 2016 or 17 at this date. And you're looking at that very bottom of the barrel. And once you get past 2016, 2017, the manufacturers gave up on that market segment. There's nothing out there. And in the Toyota Camry, when I was looking at that car, that Fiesta, the Ford dealer did make me mad in negotiations, and I was getting in my car to drive to the Lexus dealership to look at a 2011 Camry with more miles, and it was $10,000. So it was, well, that was the sticker, and I think sticker on mine was actually 79, but I was buying it on December 31st, so I got that year-end discount, if that actually exists. So the Toyota has its buy-in premium. Why it might be more reliable, you either pay for it in maintenance or you pay for it in the, you pay for it going in or you pay for it during.
One of which so is a lot.
Yeah, the other thing. Yeah, one of the other things I thought about was just, you know, if I was in this situation, I'd probably be also trying to make some side cash. So I'd want to be trying to find some other stuff to do. Yeah, whatever that is. But I thought, you know, who knows? Maybe I want to do something, you know, very blue collar and work on the weekends, you know, doing something like, I don't know, yard work or something like that. So I thought, you know, maybe I need a small truck. So I also found a few Ford Rangers of the late 90s, mid to late 90s era Ford Rangers stick shift for disapproving cat. Out there that were in that kind of under 4,000 to 5,000 range that I think could have snuck in and, you know, owning one of those, been able to make a little extra cash to help pay those payments as well.
There are a lot of Rangers I've noticed in that price range and seem to be taken care of by the previous owners, a very reasonable truck. I mean, Dakotas, I don't know if I would trust a Dakota from the year 2000. I'd trust a Ranger more. We were still selling.
I don't SMs trust then. A Dakota from that period, even if it's on a used car lot 5 miles from my house.
S trucks.
I owned a 99 Dodge Dakota.
Now, I had an 05 Dodge Dakota, so we know where we're at. And my dad had an 87 Dodge Dakota, and it wasn't one of his favorites, a company vehicle. You were saying S trucks. I had an 04. Here we go. My stories again. I had an 04 S10 brand new. I love the thing. The problem with those, though, getting into the Rangers and the S10s and that, the gas mileage on those are going to be 20, where the gas mileage on the Fiesta is, if I stay off the interstate, 38 miles a gallon. I get double the gas mileage in that car. And when we're dealing with $3 a gallon gas in Alabama, and I know some other state, I know most other states are a lot higher than that. Don't know what is it up there by you, Dave? What's gas run? It's
probably $4.15 a gallon for premium right now, which is what I run in the Cadillac just to be safe.
So you're probably 3.25 then on 87.
Yeah, I think that's probably it.
So, I mean, so that can make it, you know, make a difference too in the purchase of the car if you really think it through and fuel economy. And if you're making $10 an hour, you really need to be thinking that through. Insurance, gas costs, you know, can you do a side hustle? You know,
you
can DoorDash and Uber with an Impala, but you can't Uber with a Ranger.
Just strap them in the bed like cordwood. I've always been willing, because I have the tools and the space now in my life, I've always been willing to trade a little fuel economy for the simplicity of something older that I can fix. But if you live in an apartment and you're not a wrench, and or you're not a wrench, those aren't options. So yeah, definitely the Fiesta comes out on top. And with the stick, it'll actually be somewhat stimulating to drive, which is critical to me, at least as an operator, although I realize that these are just appliances for most people. Again, why they should be on the bus.
So didn't you say, Dave, the minimum wage was $13 an hour where you were at?
That's what my middle daughter just took, or my middle kid just told me, was that it's 13 something per hour here. But, you know, even Burger King is begging for people at $17.25 per hour. So I'm assuming most jobs up that way. Not that it's, you know, the cost of everything is so much higher here that it's like $13 an hour in a place like Alabama or Indiana where wages are lower because the cost of buying everything from gas to eating out to groceries is just a little bit lower.
Well, our minimum 7.25 or whatever the federal is, the state's never bumped it. But I wanted to, so I was going to do 13 as our next level, and that puts us to 3.25 a month. And let's see here, 325 a month. We'll say you might be able to buy a little bit newer. So we'll say you can go 48 months. That puts you at 15.6. So $12,000-$13,000 before tax, title, license, insurance. I think you can start getting into some reasonable stuff. Do you?
I mean, I hear that and I hear Model A, but you can't finance a Model A. So
you might
buy a nice Model A.
JJ Best might do it for you. If you have your
not if it's your a daily driver and you've got it as your only car, would my guess.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't do that.
Yeah, you just lie.
I wonder if State Farm would insure that. It's my daily driver. So
I've never gone back that old, but all of my old stuff has been insured as just regular cars, local
insurance. So Derek, what's our friend in Michigan? Yeah. How does he insure his daily driver Model T?
Oh, wow. You know, I don't know.
He doesn't want you.
Yeah. I don't know if he's with the H word or another one. I think he's with the H word. So, to be honest, State Farm, I mean, I've never tried to, I don't know that we've ever tried to go back that far, but I mean, all of our cars and Dave, you'll remember like the GTO and stuff like that. They were just on standard daily driver plates on the insurance, and my parents always carried State Farm. So I don't know how many questions they would ask.
The weirdest one I ever got was when I went the H word to get my 68 Camaro insured with collector's insurance. They were like, "What's your daily driver?" And I was like, "Oh, I drive a 61 Ford Falcon Futura." And they were like, "We've never encountered a situation where the daily driver is older collector car. We're not sure we can do this." I was like, "Sorry, it's what it is." And I like, I don't daily drive the Camaro, but I definitely do daily drive the Falcon. And I actually ended up talking to, I don't know, someone higher up the food chain and explaining that, "Hey, I have this car because it was cheap and I can keep it on the road and it's stimulating, et cetera." And they were like, "Yeah, okay, we'll do it." So I know that they may be the big bad that's eating the industry and the hobby, but at least back then, you know, 16, 17 years ago, that was 2009. So however long ago that was, 10 years ago, it was,
I'd say it's nearly 16, 17 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I knew it was around the time my oldest was a baby, but he was around and he's 17. So
now, what was that thing I saw the other day that a 1968 Camaro in 1990 was just as old as like a 2000 Honda Civic is today, roughly, you know?
Well, that's when my parents bought their 68, it became my 68 Camaro, and it replaced a 65 GTO, which not a GTO, 65 Malibu, which, you know, to them, it was just a used convertible from their youth. That was right about the time the muscle car bubble started to expand for the first time. And those suddenly became valuable cars later on, but I think that they were pretty affordable still.
So you got that budget, $13 an hour, classic car. I mean, I did find a Chevrolet Trax for $15,000 at Carvana. So that would be at the very, very top of that $13. That would probably put you in that 15 to 20% range with no money down. With $5,000 down, you could get it for $200 a month, which ironically, when I first found it, was $195.
In the lower end, I found a 66 International pickup truck. Very appealing, but talk about something that'd be hard to be fed with replacement parts as you need.
So I want to jump in because I hope maybe Jason's, you know, being a bit sarcastic here in the comments. But yeah, NCM Insurance they won't cover any daily driver, no matter how new or old it is. If you plan to daily drive, I know the guys over there and they will basically tell you, no, we can't do that. So
that's how you keep the premiums low, is by minimizing the risk contractually.
Yeah. But if you own enough old cars, you can wait. I better not say that. Some of the guys listen.
Also, my inner lawyer comes out and goes, actually, if they can prove that you were daily driving that, even if it was just the one day that month that it goes through the rotation, and you were on the way to work without some other old car related purpose, you're probably in violation of insurance contract.
I always wonder.
Not NCM insurance, believe it or not. I know Adam, who is the head of NCM insurance, very well. And I had that conversation with him when I switched over to NCM insurance. Uh-huh. And no, you can, they want you to drive your cars to work and all that. It's obviously, they say you have to, you know, if you get in trouble with state laws, things like that, they're not responsible. But if you are in a state or you want to risk driving it to and from work, you are covered. You can't daily drive it. You can't drive it every day. And, you know, you have an agreed upon mileage that you're going to drive them.
Okay. Well, so the mileage limitation there is one of the key factors. And the other thing is, you did touch on a good point, which is state law. Like, I used to see a rusty old Bronco throughout the year commuting on his Michigan historic plates. And I was like, this is a clear abuse. And, you know, because again, those laws and those registration things are set up for those occasional use cars, and they're flouting that. But no, I also recall one of the principals of Hagerty a few years ago explicitly saying what I just said, which was, if we can find a reason to deny you under state law because you were essentially abusing the car as transportation and not a collectible, we're going to deny the claim. I was surprised in the interview, honestly, but it was right there.
That's always a question I had back when I worked at the museum or even for restoration shops. I'm allowed to drive the car to car events and car gatherings. If I work in an automobile museum, it is a car event and a car gathering. My car is just being shown outside. So am I violating the policy by driving it to work because it's adding to the ambiance of the museum in the air?
You know, do we want to dig into those evidentiary issues? Because I can make the argument one way or the other. I mean, who's paying me?
Exactly. Hey, now wait, but remember just a few months ago, before Dave joined us, Dave, I'm sure, I don't know if you read this, but you saw what Michigan did, right?
Michigan does a lot of things.
Between Memorial Day and Labor Day now, for antique cars on antique plates, there's no rules. You can drive them as much as you want. They're considering it part of the, you know, ambiance of being in Michigan and being from the motor capital of the world. You're actually showing your car whenever you're driving it between those dates, Memorial Day and Labor Day. So in my opinion, as I said months ago on the show, kudos to Michigan, because that's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm. And the legislature said, yeah, we're going to do that. And so it's no longer an abuse to do that. So good for them, because, you know, those cars do have good reasons for being on those plates, even if they, I mean, I believe in driving old cars all the time. I just don't believe violating my insurance contractual obligations or state law to do it a little cheaper, which is what it comes down to, is, oh, I wanted the collector insurance because I didn't want to pay the premium, which means I want to take a bigger risk than I've actually contracted to, but still want to be covered in the event something bad happens to me.
Well, that's the amazing thing. When you go down to, in Michigan, we would call it the DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles.
You would not. You'd call it the Secretary of State.
Oh, yeah. Secretary of State. Sorry.
Here it's the DMV in Vermont, but I don't know what you call it.
And Kentucky. I think it must be Ohio that it's the DMV. I spent too much time in Ohio. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. The Secretary of State in Michigan, down here, you go to the county clerk's office to do all your motor vehicle things. And now I can. I'm always baffled when I go in there. I was in the clerk's office, I don't know, a few months ago doing something. And I overheard them talking to another customer, and the guy's like, you know, I got to insure my 1990, whatever it was, pickup truck. Yeah, probably for the farm down here in Kentucky. And she was like, oh, well, that's over 25 years old. Do you want the historic plates on that? I'm like, that's not like, what? You shouldn't just be offering the historic plates. Like, That should need more proof than, well, that's over 25 years. Here you go.
Back when I lived in Northern Virginia, there were a lot of people abusing the historic or antique plates, whatever it was, as daily drivers. But the one that really gets you is the farm use plates that they allow. and you're in like Middleburg, Virginia, which is one of the wealthiest communities in the country, and you have brand new Range Rovers and brand new F-350, 450 Dually crew cabs, King Ranch, blah, 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 with a farm use tag on it. It means you don't pay taxes. You don't pay license.
It says right on it, King Ranch. It's a ranch truck.
Range Rover, so you're cruising the range. Okay. Porsche 911, Dakar. Yeah, you know, okay. But yeah, those farm use tags, you always laugh when it's a couple $100,000 car or even $100,000 car. And they're going, really? I mean, you're only allowed to drive it like 25 miles within your, you know, from your ranch or your farm or your home. But come on.
This is giving World War II gas rationing and truck vibes, isn't it? You know, like, oh yeah, no, this Packard coupe is a war critical farm vehicle. You see the bed where the drum will see you? Yeah, I haul hay for cavalry horses or something.
Well, you pull up with the top up and your Duesenberg Model J with a couple bales of hay on it or something. And
Yeah. Originally in the war with the gas rationing, there were like 15 variations on the sticker, including my favorite, which is like junk dealers got an extra ration of gas. So I always wanted to build like a,
well, of course,
jalopy style Model A. Yeah, I know. Jalopy style Model A roadster pick, the scrap dealer window sticker. The only one that's reproduced is the A, the generic, you get virtually no gas. And of course, all that was about saving tires.
And Jason's right there. He says, Alabama law, if you have antique plates, you're only allowed to drive your car to car events, or car shows. You can't take it to the office or whatever unless he, like he says, he has his own cars and coffee. And the other thing is, when you put antique tags on your vehicle in Alabama, you can never remove them. You cannot decide to register it as a regular vehicle ever again. It's always an antique vehicle.
What if you transfer it out of state? I mean, you wash the title that way?
You might be able to, but I have a feeling if you do, Alabama's going to come at you for the ad valorem taxes that you alluded while you were here. So let's jump this amount to something reasonable. The average new car, the average car payment for used cars is actually down a little bit this year. But as of September 17th, it's $525 a month. So for the average person to afford the average used car, my little book says you need to make $42,000 a year. So at $42,000, you can afford a $525 a month car. And for those of you who don't do the math, that's $21 an hour.
No wonder why.
What would you get for that? Let's say if it's $525, we'll keep it to the typical 72-month car loan. That puts you at 37.8. So deduct, back it out, you're going to spend $32,000-$33,000.
So we've gotten to a point where we can actually be particular and say, okay, so where in the country do I live? What does my commute look like? Yeah. Because this all makes a difference, right? Because if I'm only driving a quarter mile to the office, like maybe I want something electric with violent acceleration. But if I've got to drive 35 miles, I probably still want something that's fuel sipping. My current commute, I think my Falcon is, my Corvair is about perfect. I mean, yeah, it only gets 20 miles per gallon, but it's just enough time to get it warmed up and you never exceed 55 miles an hour. So you don't need overdrive. My Corvair was that expensive a car, but you could certainly get something equivalent to it for that kind of money that would be in much nicer shape and more fun to drive, and yet of similar capabilities.
Derek, you got 33.
Sorry, guys. I just pulled up my local dealership here, used car section. So I'm gonna car shop real quick live on Thursday night on No Driving Gloves.
I think at 33, you're opening up the book to a lot of cars. I don't think I could narrow it down if you're. If you're at that 2021, you're getting in, you can get into used BMWs. You can get into good, decent used pickup trucks that have less than 100,000 miles on them, just barely. You can get into, you can get into a 10-year-old Lexus or 15-year-old Lexus or something.
At that point, I can get. I can get into a 2017 Cadillac XT5 SUV, has 49,212 miles on it. And right now it is $21,800.
I mean, I would take that or the pickup truck over the German stuff, because you're getting into ticking time bomb expensive maintenance era when you're talking used German stuff. But the pickup truck, I mean, that's a sweet spot for those. Those are getting pricey from that. The Cadillac would certainly be nice, although my inner simplicitous says there's a lot of tech ladled into that thing. Where do your door control modules and stuff start going weird?
Let's say, here comes John again, blah, 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 blah. My mom drives a XT5, and I believe it's an 18 or 19. She's never had a problem with it. I mean, they probably drive 35 miles a week. They would be the ideal customer for an electric car, but they love it. Problem free. It's their second one, I believe. I think they're a good value, good buy. I mean, one of my exes had that Cadillac ATS that was heavily modified. It was kind of the unofficial prototype of the ATS-V, but it was a great car, even with all the modifications. Very reliable, didn't give us any problems.
I like
the car until she spun it off the road.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, if you're going to go that, you know, truck route, or let's call it what's the small series trucks now. I mean, I'm even looking at certified pre-owned. So you're getting a warranty, you're getting some of those factory, you know, protections. And I mean, a 2020 Chevy Colorado Z71 packaged at 47, just over 47,500 miles is $30,000.
See those numbers when you're looking at it this way seem reasonable. But when you're hearing these car and these people talk about car pricing, et cetera, the average price of a new car in the United States, it's actually down 4.3% since December 2022. And in September, it was $47,870, the average price of a new car. A lot of freaking money there. If you're
clearly car prices have come down by doing that quick look on, you know, those used cars, but it's still like, to me, it's just still so much money. What did you say the monthly would be on that, John?
How much?
Like 31, 32,000, where we're looking at right now. Didn't you say 500 something?
Yeah, you're going to be about $550. And that's before maintenance. That's before insurance. And something like that's probably going to be $100, $150 a month insurance, you know, $100 a month in gas for the average person. You know, you're $750. You got $750 of a month going into that without really any.
Now I'm into the territory where I want to ride the bus just out of spite, because to heck with that.
You know, and it's
exactly.
It's there was a one of I listened to the Daily Drive, which is a podcast very deep into the weeds of the automobile industry. And a couple of weeks ago, they had a lady on from Edmonds, and they were talking to her about new car prices. And their conversation basically said, when people come in to buy a new car, they expect to pay $30,000 or $35,000. And the reality of the situation is a new car, and she was actually using a $49,000 estimate, which was the December 2022 price. But say, okay, you $48,000 with this most recent number. And what I really, you know, and people don't want to pay it, especially with today's interest rates. And that's the car price before you were adding on interest in anything. And I'd have to do some quick math to figure out exactly what your obviously your payment should be around $800 a month. And to make an $800 a month car payment, you better be making about 65-70K a year. And you know, her basic statement, and it really, really annoyed me. And it's one reason I went down this road and mentioned it to the guys a few weeks ago. Her statement is the consumer has to get a grasp on reality. And that is what cars cost. And she was about that blunt with it. And my response to that mentally is maybe the car manufacturers need to get a grasp on reality and realize not everybody makes $70K a year to afford a car. It seems money's liquid right now and everybody's got more than they know what to do with, but we need to get these things. Something's got to give here. And either
hang on. Not to make this an economy podcast, but did I just hear you right? Did you just say it seems like right now money is liquid and everybody has more money than they know what to do with?
Yes.
I would like to have a problem.
Because I see the exact opposite.
Well, I mean, the economy is very good. I just am not personally seeing it. And I don't think Derek in the nonprofits is seeing that. But yes, well, on paper, people have $49,000 to spend on a new car, I guess. But that doesn't mean they're going to be happy about it or that they're actually going to pay it, even though the manufacturers seem to have calculated they will. But that what are the sales figures say? Because that's the real question. That tells the story more than an opinionated person from Edmunds.
Well, the supply recovery is because the U.S. vehicle inventory has increased by 52% over the last year, which means they're not selling.
Okay.
Automakers are lowering prices and offering deals again. Tesla has had all their price cuts. We won't even go into that article, but the article goes on to say that a challenge to affordability remain high interest rates, inflation. That's too political there. A deficit of available vehicles at lower price points means they're not building the cheaper cars. Because guess what? The cheaper cars are selling is probably the issue. And the depreciation, I mean, it's... And this article says, a good rule of thumb on how much you can afford to pay for a car, and this is defending the $50,000 price point, is no more than 35% of your annual pre-tax income. I don't know anybody in my realm of friends that can afford to lay out 35% of their income for a car when you're already laying out 20% for your house, which now you're at 55% of your income. 10% of your income for food. Now you're at 65% of your income. And you're paying 20%.
So I can have a car to drive there.
20% of your income is going to that taxes. So we've got 10% of our income left. I mean, it's...
Well, and now, wait. Because now add to that, John, and I know you're not in this situation, but Dave and myself and many people in this country have family and they have kids. And you're shelling out, I mean, in some cases, one parent works just to pay for childcare in this country.
And they'd better make a certain amount to the mix. Because they won't even cover it.
These you know, studies that say, oh, you can afford 35% of your income a year to buy a car, they're not factoring in any of the other expenses in these people's income. And that's... It's just ridiculous. I'm sorry.
I can't think of a car, especially a new one, that is anything that was built in the last 25 years, that would compel me to want to pay $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $1,000 a month or more to own it. Like, no, thank you. Not even, and especially not pre-insurance, pre-registration, pre-maintenance. No way. That's crazy. Unless my income goes up way more dramatically than I expected to in the next 18 months. You know, there's no way that I would ever want to pay that level if you wish.
Yeah, Derek's right. I'm a dink, dual income, no kids most of my life. Whether or not I'm married or whatever, I'm usually in a dual income home. Disapproving Cat points out more than 17.5% of buyers pay more than $1,000 a month. And I believe I read something close to that, so I'm going to go with his. Lots of people have way more money than brains. There was a point in time with my ex-wife, so this was over 15 years ago, that I was paying $1,000 a month for my cars. I had three cars financed. Yes, more money than brains. But their total, three cars, came up to $1,000 a month, actually 900 and change. So paying I don't know about paying $1,000 a month for a car. And I actually know people that are leasing Lamborghinis at $5,600 a month and $6,300 a month. totally different world, different. It's just, there's a lot of money out there for cars, and there are cars, they want a lot of money for cars. There's just, for the majority of people, the money is not there. I mean, where Derek was saying everybody's, when I said everybody's liquid in that, I just sat down and had lunch with a realtor recently, and she was saying one of the issues on buying a house now is not whether or not you have a pre-approval letter. It's whether or not you have the money in the bank, because so many houses are being sold for cash. And we're talking $400,000 and $500,000 cash offers. They don't care if you've got a 30-day or you know, a 30-year mortgage approved for whatever, because a cash deal closes in 14 days. A finance deal is going to usually take 30 days. They can have their money now and be gone. It's, I don't know where the money's coming from. I don't know why everybody thinks they have the money's there, except the people running the companies have too much money to, you know, they don't relate back. But I so spend my day, I spend my day among commoners and, very grassroots people.
Is this the corporate landlord class that's swooping in with this kind of cash? Because it can't be individuals. This can't be people who intend to reside in these homes that have $400,000 cash. That's not even a nice number for someone that's got $400,000 cash sitting around.
No, Jason, I'm not moving again. This is just, I have multiple friends that are realtors. But it's, and I know I pronounced that word wrong, but live with it, people. I don't know. I wanted to just go down this show and say, hey, if you had this much, this would be the car I would recommend. This would be the car I recommend. If you can afford it, I'm gonna sum it up, and you guys follow my lead here. For people out there, if you can afford it, what car would you recommend people to buy? And I'm immediately, if you want an SUV, a RAV4. And if you want a car, a Camry. And my present girlfriend has a Camry, great car. And she put a ton of money down, and it's affordable. But when she told me what she paid for her Camry back in early 2020, her Mercedes was totaled, so she had to buy something in that horrible time to buy a car. I couldn't believe it. And then I've learned what Camrys cost, because I remember Toyota thawing at $18,000 for a Camry. Doesn't exist anymore.
Okay, well, I'm gonna stick with the Malibu recommendation from earlier. If you want a car, and if you want an SUV, I'm gonna say get the proper year Suburban that you can afford, because that truck platform has been used under, and the GMC version counts too, scads and scads and scads of things, and is very repairable and very well understood. Lasts. So there you go. Sorry to be boring and Chevy, but that's where I am.
I can agree with you there. And if you don't want the length of the Suburban, I think the Tahoes and
All those variants. There's the Yukon, the Yukon XL, and the Tahoe, and the Suburban. It's all the same truck, just different ideas.
Yeah. I mean, if I was going to go on an SUV, the Suburban, stuff like that, great. Tahoe, if you don't want to go rear wheel drive, all of that, the Chevy Traverse, GMC Acadia line are really great vehicles. I mean, we've got an Acadia in the family here, and it's great for what we use it for, especially if you got family, plenty of room for the kids and family. And I'm kind of here with Dave. I mean, I've got a 2019 Chevy Malibu, and that's, kind of what I swing with right now. I mean, I'm normally a truck guy, but with the long drive to work and all that, the Malibu gets great gas mileage, and it's a reliable car. So, if you've got the funds, it's a good place to be.
And you had the full-size truck doing that commute, and due to circumstances beyond your control, you know, the truck went away and you ended up with the Malibu, and you made that conscious decision not to get the big truck again.
The truck incident happened right before the transition to that long.
And what was I going to, and like, you know, Dave's speaking from his garage, Derek speaking from his garage, and I threw out the Camry and I threw out the Fiesta early on. I've got those in the driveway. My oddball out's the Mini. It's the Mini. It's my fun car. I've got to have a toy car. And it's that, as Dave put it, that German grenade waiting to go off. and we're at 50,000 miles on the Mini with no warranty. So I'm waiting for that German grenade to go off.
Ooh, disapproving cat has a good one. And I didn't think about it, but even a good looking vehicle, in my opinion, the 2019 Buick LaCrosse all wheel drive with a 3.6.
Is that the crossover?
Disapproving cat, I approve.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
We rented one of those coming back from Ohio once, and actually that is the one and only late model car that I've enjoyed driving. And part of it was just escaping home when our flight had been canceled, but it was actually a really nice driving car, probably because it was designed from old people and I like old people things. I just happen to usually like them old. Okay, the LaCrosse was the sedan, which makes it very good looking. I forget what the crossover is, but that was the car we ran. I'm not a crossover guy, but it drove nicely. Pleased. Yeah, this was not an
Envision. Yeah, the Envision's the big one. You what's the little one?
This had some pseudo French name.
The Rendezvous.
Yes, the Buick Rendezvous. That's real French, but yeah.
Let's just say Dave was having a little Rendezvous.
Well, they had that car movie called Rendezvous. That cult classic it is. I don't know. Did we accomplish anything, listeners? Let us know in the comments. You know, like, share, subscribe. Let us know in the comments. Give us your feedback. I'm going to let Derek do his little speech. Unless anybody's got anything to add to this topic, or has anybody done anything exciting personally? We haven't talked much anything personal lately. I haven't.
I ordered lug nuts for the Corvair because I think I told you guys last week that I got the Pitman arm and fixed and the brakes adjusted and all that jazz. So it's
lug nuts. Pretty
prime time again. Hey, I've been running undersized lug nuts this whole time. I've been a danger to myself and others, so I'm making it right. Plus the Yahoo.
Wait. So you're saying you were running undersized nuts, so you decided to step up and get regular sized nuts?
Yes, that's exactly. Yep. I don't understand any subtext with that at all. So yes, I will soon have secure, properly directioned tires on my Corvair with my brand new shiny nuts. Thank you.
He won't have to worry about his ball bearings coming loose.
Actually, Chevy moved on to roller bearings finally with T2. It took a while.
Yeah. Now, and I'll be a little bit more boring than lug nuts. This is something the last few years I've wanted to buy Anco wiper blades. I liked Anco when I worked for Shell in a gas station. That's all we put on cars and they always work. And the only thing I can seem to find anymore is Michelin and Rain-X, and they never freaking work. And they're $20 a wiper blade. The girlfriend said to me a few weeks ago, "Hey, I need wiper blades." And I said, "Well, I'll pick you up some," thinking I'll stop and buy the crappy whatever, you know, next time I'm in a Walmart or AutoZone or whatever. And then all of a sudden I clicked in my head, I'm going to Rock Auto and I'm going to see what they got. $4 a piece.
Heck yeah.
$8. I got two Anco wiper arms. She absolutely loves them. You know, with shipping, I think they cost me $12. So this is an endorsement, not paid or anything. Rock Auto, buy your damn wiper blades there. I mean, the stuff that you seem to buy locally, they're not good. So it's, like I said, it's a little bit more boring than lug nuts, but I found them finally because I thought a little bit out of the box and I needed to buy another bunch of oil and filter for the Fiesta because I'm about 10,000 miles on this oil. So it's time to do an oil change. So,
hey, small victories.
There's my car maintenance tip. What's yours, Derek?
Oh, I have to have a car maintenance tip. I was going to say what I've been up to. Last Saturday and this Saturday coming up, we've been at work. We've been running the Rally for the Lane, which is one of our big fundraisers every year, and take a wonderful countryside tour in about 25 of the museum's educational cars. And we're going to be going again to Tullahoma, Tennessee, if everybody knows where that is. The Beechcraft Museum is there, as in Beechcraft aircraft. And let me tell you what, I highly recommend a visit to the Beechcraft Museum, a fantastic museum. I'm hoping to get a little more time there this weekend. I got in late because we had one car breakdown on the Rally. So I was the chase car that got to wait for the trailer to show up and switch things out. So I got to lunch a little late, but I got to run around really quick with their executive director. He showed me some of the highlights, and I would just say, highly, highly recommended. And then, of course, in 2 weeks, guys, listeners, don't forget that at least myself, I think John is still attempting to be there, but we'll be at the Chattanooga Motor Car Festival in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Lane Motor Museum will have 4 cars there. I personally will have one of my cars there, the Lloyd Sport Custom that you guys hear so much about on the show. So if you're there and you see us or see whoever is there, myself, I don't know if John's going to come still or not, come up, say hi, all that wonderful stuff. And hopefully we'll catch some of you there.
No, my month had to change and I'm not going to make it up until about 3 or 4 days ago. I was intending on giving it a shot. It's not going to happen. And I did not know that about Tullahoma. Tullahoma is actually in my district that I do some auditing in. I might have to figure out how to spend a few extra hours in town next time I'm through. That usually doesn't happen.
Just some quick highlights if you want. They have Stagger Wing, so Beechcraft, famous for the Stagger Wing biplanes. They have Stagger Wing serial number 1 there, the very first Stagger Wing. And they also have one of the, and at one of the, I believe it was 5 Travel Air mystery ships there. However, it just so happens to be the mystery ship that won the National Air Races. That's right, Conway. Yeah.
Jason,
I walked into the hangar. I walked into the hangar and I said, "Is that a mystery ship?" And the guy looked at me like, "How do you know what that is?"
You're too young to know that.
Yeah. He was like, "Number 2, yeah, and it's the one that won the National Air Races." I'm like, "Holy crap."
In Cleveland.
No, the year the mystery ship won was the year they were in Los Angeles, I believe. Got to remember, they moved around a little bit.
They
were mostly in Cleveland, but they did move around.
Now, Jason was commenting that he was going to be at the Crawford in Cleveland.
Oh, he'll be at the Crawford in Cleveland. Yes. Yeah. The home of the history of the National Air Races.
Yes.
Pardon?
Do they still do the Reno races, or did those get canceled after that big crash and that replaced Cleveland? The post-war air races aren't as cool because it's just all hot running.
Yeah. But I don't remember if the Reno air races are still going or not. We'll have to look that up. But with that, are we ready to wrap up, guys? What do you say?
I think we are.
Dave, you good?
John, I'm good.
You good?
Do your little spin and I'll tell you about the Reno air races.
All right. Well, guys, as always, thanks for joining us on this Thursday evening. And if you're listening on the audio podcast, thanks for subscribing and listening to us. Remember, if you want to, enjoy more of No Driving Gloves, be a more, see the members or the listeners of No Driving Gloves grow, that community we like to have, go ahead and on the QR, wherever it is, go ahead and click on that, buy us a coffee, 2, 3, 100, whatever you want to do. Remember, on the YouTube channel, go ahead and click that little bell so you can be notified when we're going live and all those wonderful things. Give us a like over on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, wherever you find us. And of course, as we always like to say here at No Driving Gloves, the best way you guys can help us out, if you want to, really help out, grow the community, do all that, help us grow, share the show.
And the Reno air races are still going on. As a matter of fact, they run October 4th, 2024 to October 6th, 2024. So they start tomorrow. So if you
still got time to get there,
just air race you out there.
I'll get my P50.
Now everybody knows what to do. Get off your ass, go burn some gas, because we are out.
This show was a part of the No Driving Gloves Network, produced and edited by John Viviani of Magic City Podcast, with voice work by Gary Conger. So until the next exit.